The pride, passion, and pageantry of college football lives here. This is the Paul Feinbaum Show, Hour 4 podcast.
Back, final hour. We'll talk a little bit later about the big game in Knoxville tonight. We went there a couple hours ago talking to Andrea Carter. Let's get back to the calls, and John is in Indiana. Hello, John.
Hi, Paul. How's it going?
Very well. Thanks a lot.
Hey, Paul, I'm a Notre Dame fan. Don't hold that against me.
Of course
not. If we're talking about Coach Bryant, I wanted to talk about a couple of the Notre Dame-Alabama games in the 1970s. I know in 1973 and 74, Notre Dame beat Alabama and kept them from winning the national championships. But
sure
in
did.
Those two games, Coach Bryant was the most gracious and gentleman after those two defeats. I know it had to hurt him bad, but he was a complete gentleman. And I think after those two games, him and Ara Parseghian become good friends.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure that's right. And what people don't, obviously you understand, but Ara was really Bryant's contemporary. I mean, he was considered among the greatest coaches of his era. And he didn't coach very long, but he was certainly among the most respected. One of those games, I guess it was the 73 season. The next year's game did not have quite the consequence, but I mean, it was a one versus two game in the Sugar Bowl on New Year's Eve, and a game that came down to literally the last minute of the game.
Yeah, Paul, that in the 74 game, Notre Dame had a loss. They weren't
right.
Playing for the national championship. I think Alabama was, but we
yeah,
weren't.
Yeah, I think they
we
were.
Spoiled
no, you're right.
Them.
Yeah, the game was important. I think Alabama was still – I think Alabama still had an outside shot. But the 73 Sugar Bowl game, it was winner-take-all. That was one of the – of that era, I mean, again, there were some huge games. The famous Oklahoma-Nebraska game in 71. But that was during the season. I mean, this was a national championship game. Hey, thank you so much for the call. Connie is up next. Good afternoon to you, Connie.
How are you, sir?
Well, thanks.
My story begins when I was a rookie cop working 11 to 7 shift, and I used to sit in front of the Birmingham Post-Herald every morning, and I had a buddy that worked in the printing press, and he would bring me a paper down, and I would decide whether I was going to kill you or like you.
As a policeman, that makes me nervous.
My Bear Bryant story is that I got elected to be a motor scout or to ride a motorcycle. In order to ride a motorcycle, you had to ride a three-wheeler, and you had to write tickets. And so I was writing my tickets one day and doing all my stuff, and I went in front of City Hall and I turned my tickets in. As I came back out of City Hall, I looked across the street to the Greyhound bus station, and I saw this giant standing out in front of the bus station. And I thought, I know him. I know him from somewhere. So I drove across the street. It was Bear Bryant. And I introduced myself, and I said, Coach Bryant, what's wrong? He said, well, son, I've got a minute and 45 seconds to be at the municipal auditorium. And I said, well, you and me both can't fit this little bitty three-wheeler. And he said, well, what if I crawl on the back of it? And I said, you're kidding me. And he said, no, sir. He said, I got a minute and 45 seconds. He said, don't carry me to the front door, carry me to the back door. There'll be too many photographers out there, and they're going to make fun of me. So I put him on the back of my three-wheeler, turned my blue light on, turned around in front of City Hall, and hauled ass over to the municipal auditorium. And I know you knew where all those were back
Sure.
then. And went down
so,
the alley.
So my question, Connie, is what was he doing? Why didn't he have a way over there?
He had gone on a bus trip to meet a recruit.
Oh, okay.
And had come back from the bus trip.
Wow, that's amazing.
Can
you imagine? I mean,
know.
Imagine one of the most famous people around. That is a
taking the bus trip.
So I'm assuming you got him there pretty quickly.
Yes, sir. As fast as that little three-wheeler would go. And when I let him off, he got off, and he was laughing and rolling around. I'm sure he had probably had a drink or two, but he shook my hand.
By the way,
that's
pretty certain.
Well, he asked me what my name was, and I told him, and he said, "You come to Bryant-Denny Stadium next practice, you're in the tower with me." And I spent four times I went down there and spent time with him.
Are you serious? What was that like?
Yes. Wonderful. Wonderful. I've never seen a man that can control as many people as he could just with his eyes. All he had to do was turn his head and people would run. I mean, they were scared to death of him. But he was a wonderful man, and he's buried across the street from my brother-in-law, and my wife and I go once a year and decorate his grave.
That is remarkable.
Yeah.
And, well,
but that was my experience with him, and he actually invited me on the sidelines with him twice, and it really pissed my boss off really bad because I was supposed to take care of an intersection once I become a Motor Scout. I was supposed to be at an intersection, and he had requested me to come inside the stadium with him. Mm. And I got to go inside the stadium with him and walk on the sidelines several times with him.
That is, what a remarkable story, Johnny.
Story.
Well, hey, that's not just like, that's more than a story. That's a chapter.
Well, I got a lot of pictures. Got a lot of pictures. I got a lot
of pictures. How long were you with the department?
21 years. I've been retired 30 years this coming May.
Wow. That is such a great story. But
I kept up with you. There are several times that I wanted to kill you. But there are several times that you wrote remarkable stories. And I just appreciate your show. I listen to it every day. I've never called.
Well, Connie,
I've been
tell you what this means. Back in the day, I was concerned about my safety. We had a couple of death threats, and I had my phone was tapped at one point. But I never realized I had to fear the policemen who were protecting me from. I didn't realize they were the ones that were that may have been leaving me the threats.
It was an inside job.
Well, none of us would have
wonder
really
why they
killed
never found
you,
the guy.
None of us would have really killed you, but we would have took you out back and whipped your ass. That's all we'd
have. Yeah, I'm glad to hear that, Connie. I feel much better now. What a great call.
But I thank you for what you do, and I've got several more Bear Bryant stories, and I'll probably call back in later and let you
Connie,
know.
Connie, like Coach Bryant said, you're welcome anytime. I can't wait. What a remarkable call. One of my favorite moments of the year so far. Thank you so much.
Yes, sir.
You be
thank
well.
You.
Thanks, Connie.
Yeah.
Should I be worried about that?
No.
I still go through that town. You know, there might be some guys that, you know what,
I remember that fireball.
I think I owe him one. I got problems with Larry in Shelby County. That's a county south of Birmingham. I got Birmingham Police Department guys still making threats. I'm in trouble. Steve is in Arizona. Hello, Steve.
How you doing today, Paul?
Steve, we're doing great. Thank you.
I was stationed at Fort Bend in Georgia, and me and my father didn't see eye to eye, and him and my oldest brother got tickets to, I believe it was the last homecoming game that Coach Bryant coached, and I believe it was Alabama-Cincinnati.
In fact, it was Alabama-Cincinnati. I was at that game.
A friend and I drove from Fort Bend and met my father and oldest brother there at the stadium and watched the game. And my memory was when he walked out on the field and stood at the goalpost, peeping out from under the brim of that hat with that grin on his face. I'll never forget it. And he sold a lot of Coca-Cola and Golden Flake potato chips down in the state of Alabama.
He sure did, Steve.
On his evening,
hey, thank you so much for sharing. That game, I'll tell a quick story before we go to the break. Mike Gottfried, who later became a very well-known ESPN broadcaster. He and Ron Franklin did the primetime game. He was a coach of that team. And Mike told me once that before the game, he told his team, they had a pretty good team. He said, listen, everyone's aware that Coach Bryant's head coach at Alabama. You know, I don't want you looking at him. We're there to beat Alabama, not to idolize Alabama. And everybody said, yes, sir, coach. And they ran out in the field, and there's Coach Bryant leaning. He would lean against the goalpost before the game. He said, and every one of his players went over there and shook hands with him. We'll take a short break, and we're coming right back.
You're listening to the Paul Feinbaum Show podcast.
Welcome back. Let's check out Ken in Winston-Salem, North Carolina. Hello, Ken.
Hey, Paul. How are you doing today?
We're doing great. Thank you.
First-time caller. Love your show. Watch it every day. Just had a story, a contrasting story about Bear and Saban regarding my brother. My brother was a fanatic. I went to Alabama for Bears last year. It was my first year, but my brother was a much bigger fan. And he went to Bear Bryant's house, I believe, on Watermelon Road. And Mary Harmon, I believe his wife, answered. And she said, he's not there. He's at his office. So my brother went to the athletic complex. And Bear met with him, took a picture with him.
That's amazing.
Was so very cordial to him as well. A year later, my brother returned. He had taken the picture and made a T-shirt transfer of it. And he met Bear again, and Bear signed it for him. And it was just an amazing experience of somebody who would take the time to talk to a complete stranger. And that had such an impact on me and my brother and the stories he would tell. Years later, about 5 years into Saban's time at Alabama, my brother was in Minnesota then, and he drove down and went to the athletic complex with the goal of meeting Nick Saban. And he told his secretary of his long trip all night, and he got a tour of the athletic complex, the facilities, and wound up, I still have a picture, in Nick Saban's office with all of the championship rings, the 6 championship rings, on his hands, sitting in Saban's office, but never got to meet Nick Saban. But, you know, I just think it's a contrast. I don't know that he would ever gotten to meet Nick Saban, but I was there when Bear Bryant passed and saw that procession, and just think he was absolutely unique to college football and to the world as well. And I just wanted to share
Ken,
that
I'm
story.
So glad you did, and again, what you said is really interesting. It's a different world today, but no, you just can't. Back then, you could call the coach up, you could drop by his office, you could go by to see him at his house. Today, it's not happening anywhere, but for that matter, it's not just Alabama, but it's just we live in different times. Bryant is up next in Texas. Hello, Bryant.
Hey, Paul, how are you today?
We are doing great.
Well, you know, I came home a bit ago and turned on the TV and saw what you were talking about. Of course, I knew today was the 40th anniversary of Coach Bryant's passing. I had a great privilege of working for Coach Bryant for 8 years at Alabama, first as a graduate assistant, and then the last 6 years as a full-time coach on his staff. And I was on the last staff when, of course, he retired and we went to the Liberty Bowl. It was a great experience for myself, not only myself, but my family. And, you know, just a great man and a great deal to us. Quick story. When I first went to Alabama, I didn't play there, graduate there. I got recommended to Coach Bryant as a grad assistant from a guy out in Texas, and talked to Coach Bryant. He hired me on the phone, drove out, my wife, my daughter, myself, First time I ever met Coach Bryant with Curly Hallman and another couple of coaches introduced us. And he had talked to me on the phone the week before. He looked at me and he said, "Glad you're here." And he said, "I tell you what, I'm going to call you Tex. There's only one Bryant around here and it's not going to be you." And that name, that name stuck forever. I can't ever remember a practice schedule or whatever that it didn't say Tex on it. To this day, I get season tickets. It says Bryant, Tex Pool.
But, oh, my goodness. I know exactly who you are. Yeah, Brian, it's so great to connect. I mean, we were talking a minute ago, and I was trying to remember off the top of my head who was on that staff. I know Sylvester was, Bruce Arians, obviously Mal.
Oh, yeah.
Was
Ken Donahue.
Who else was on that staff with you?
Well, it was D-Pal.
D-Pal, okay.
Bobby Marks, yeah. Bruce Arians, Steve Hale.
Right,
Lewis
okay.
Campbell. Of course, Jeff Rousey had left the year before.
Okay.
And moved on. But I coached with Brother Oliver, had been there. Paul, you know this, just some great coaches that I learned more football from those guys that carried me. I went on and coached at University of Texas and Tulane and Rice, Vanderbilt. But I learned more football from those guys. And, of course, with a guy like Mal Moore, what a great guy. Ken Donahue, I learned when Coach Bryant moved me over to defense. I learned so much football from him. But it was a great group of people. And I remember reading your articles late in Coach Bryant's career. Matter of fact, I still have some. You were talking a while ago about newspaper. I kept everything. Stuck at my desk, but I've read your articles. But those were some great times. I can remember the national championships and so forth. But it wasn't about that. It was just about the players, some great players, the way Coach Bryant treated them, and just some great times. And
Coach, you know, when you came down to that final game, and again, it was the season had gotten away, and there was one more chance. I mean, did you feel? I've talked to so many players. I saw Jeremiah not too long ago, and some others. What was it like to be a coach on that team, knowing how desperately everyone wanted to see him go out a winner?
Well, you just can't believe how it was that we did not want to lose that game. A quick story, the day before the game, as we practiced over at that time was Memphis State.
Right.
Their practice facility, and Coach Bryant always we had a squad meeting, and just the coaches and the players and Coach Bryant. And Coach started talking, and I'm going to say two or three times, he broke down, couldn't continue, and then he composed himself and just said, "Hey, look, don't go out there for me. Go out there for yourselves." And it is wasn't a dry eye in the place, and it's just it was unbelievable. I still have some recordings. I have a little cassette player that I carried with me. I know Jeff Rousey and myself, we carried them and taped some things. But I have our last meeting, coaches meeting with Coach, on the tape, and I also have the last meeting pregame meal that Coach Bryant talked to the squad. So I don't want to get long. I know you have other calls.
No. Listen, this is, considering, and I realize everyone's life went a different course after that, but the idea of reconnecting with you here today, and Russ Wood called in a couple hours ago.
Oh, yeah.
We heard from Jerry Duncan.
Great player.
I mean, it's just I don't know. I guess everyone, you know, the passage of time is pretty amazing, but this is a day and this is an era that I don't know, Coach. I don't see it. I forget the national championships, but this is more than that.
Oh yeah, it is. It is. And I'll say this, Coach Saban has done a great job there at the university. And I know when Mal hired him and going through the things that he went through prior to that, getting that guy and what he's done for the university and the state and Tuscaloosa is just unbelievable. And course, losing Mal Moore was just a stake in my heart because I was really close to Mal. But Coach Saban has done just a super job, and we always enjoy. We're season ticket holders and go back. And every time we've had a reunion, our 78, 79 national championship teams, Coach Saban has come over to the the Friday night before the game and has come over to the museum and just took time to take pictures. And I can remember when he coached for the Oilers out here for Jerry Glanville years ago.
Oh, yeah.
And I talked to him about that. But anyway.
No, that's listen, I'm in near debt for sharing those stories with us because I mean, I sometimes forget. Every time we do this, I ask myself, I wonder, are we doing the right thing? And when I hear from people like you and so many others, I know we are, because yeah. There's nothing else quite like this in college sports. I don't think when, in terms of a man we're 40 years to the day, and all of this seems as vivid as yesterday.
Oh, absolutely, absolutely. I had moved on to a different job. I didn't get hired by Ray, and I talked to Coach. I was leaving to go to that job on Monday. Went in and visited with him and had a great visit, told him what he meant to me, and left. And it was Wednesday when he passed away, and my wife called me from Tuscaloosa and told me the bad news, and just heartbroken. But anyway, I'll let you go.
Thank you very much, Coach.
I've never called in before,
I'm so glad you did. You bet. Thank you.
Thanks, Paul.
Yeah. It was, by the way, it was such a difficult transition. I'll never forget that. Ray Perkins came down from Ray Perkins was the head coach of the New York Giants. He came down on a Monday to have a press conference. And the next thing you know, I see people like Brian right there leaving, and they're forlorn. And, I mean, Perkins pretty much fired the entire staff that Brian had. I mean, he took no prisoners. But that's what you had to do. What an incredible call! I mean, I just am in shock over that call. How cool that was to talk to somebody on coach's staff. Nikki Fargus has been on a few coaching staffs, including the coaching staff of, in our mind, the greatest women's coach in college basketball history. We'll talk to her in just a moment.
You're listening to the Paul Finebaum Show podcast.
And as part of We Back Pat Week, we continue our conversations. We went to Knoxville earlier, big game there tonight. Nikki Fargus joins us, of course, well-known coach at UCLA and LSU, and, of course, her work with the WNBA. And now we'll talk to you as what was it like to be a player for Pat as well as a coach. Welcome to the show again. I know you probably don't go a day in your life in the worlds that you travel without someone asking you about Pat, so we'll start off right there. Tell us about your first experience.
My first experience with Pat was obviously growing up about 20 minutes from Knoxville, Tennessee. I was able to watch the Lady Vols and go to some of those games at an early age. And then when she decided and they decided to recruit me, I knew that this was going to be the place. I didn't know if I was going to take all five of my visits, but I was drawn to Tennessee at such an early age, and my mom also made it very clear that Tennessee was the place for me too. When you have all these coaches coming into your home, and your mom only cooks for one team and one coach, then you know something is going on there. But I've been able to watch the Lady Vols, you know, evolution from the 80s into the 90s and then 2000. And I've been with her at every level. Not only did I play for her, I was her grad assistant, and I was assistant coach. So as a player, though, I will tell you, if you did not want to transfer or if you did not want to leave there was something wrong, because she just pushed you to that point. And I'm so glad that I stayed. I think we're in this world now where, you know, student athletes are three schools in. Where I come from, you're not leaving. You're going to stick it out. So just really impressive of how she's impacted all of us, not just those who played for her, but also those who she came in contact with, or even those who followed her and didn't know her personally.
How did she know? And obviously, as a coach later, you had to pick up on some of this. Yeah, you know, where that line was between pushing you to the edge and then making sure she didn't completely push you off the cliff.
It was interesting because it literally made us closer as a team. I can remember there were practices, and it may be my day, And teammates like Dina Head, Deidre Charles, Jody Adams, they would come and support you and say, you're good, you've got it. You know, playing for her, there was only two responses, though, that you can give Coach Summitt. So if she was challenging you and she was on you, the response was rebound. And then if she did give you a compliment, then you would say 2 points. That was the only communication that we were going to have with her. So I think she, by doing that and challenging us, it also made us closer as a team, because we then started playing for each other, and she cultivated this energy amongst us, like, no, you can't talk to our teammate that way, or you can't come at my teammate that way. And that's when I knew we had something special.
You know, we've been talking about greatness all day, and at what point did you as a young person get it where, okay, I'll quit hating her in the deep crevices of my mind and realize that this is all for good?
I think because once it clicks for you, I think maybe my sophomore, junior year, it clicked for me that this is a place that also exposes you to so many other great things. And so there's the basketball side of it. But I was at a university where Joan Cronin, the women's athletic director, you had Debbie Jennings as our head athletic trainer.
She was my boss at the school newspaper.
Yes, and you had Carrie Hallen, our academic advisor, and then you had Debbie Jennings, who was our head sports SID. And so I saw all these women in leadership roles, and so that was not common to have a separate department where it was a women's athletic department and a men's athletic department. But she fought for us to have better resources. She fought for us to be able to have the same that our male counterparts. And I think once you saw that and you saw the support of the city of Knoxville, where you're averaging at that time 5,000, 6,000, 7,000 fans, those are the things that you don't take for granted, that she was going to make sure you had a quality education. And so taking the basketball out of it, there were so many other positives that she presented to us at a young age.
Before you go, this game tonight was a game that was born during this era. It was the sometimes they played twice a year. It was the defining game. Sometimes it seemed to dwarf what would happen at the end of the season because there was so much attention on it.
Yeah, you know, the UConn and Tennessee rivalry, you know, in the mid-90s, I think it changed women's basketball. What she, and I know Pat would always say, I'm going to play the best to be able to say that I am the best. And at that time, UConn was the team that was emerging. She never backed down and saying, and she was very proud to have the number one toughest schedule in the country. But to see what it has done for the women's game and the growth of it because of the rivalry, now you're covering more of these women's basketball games. Your players are becoming household names. And so it brought a lot of attention onto women's basketball when at that time it wasn't a lot. I mean, you had the Final Four covered and those type of things, but not like this. So just so excited for tonight, because both you have two legendary coaches and you have two legendary programs that have moved the way for women's basketball.
It's going to be quite a special night a little bit later on ESPN. Nikki, I know you'll be here all night talking about this and other games. We really appreciate you dropping by.
Well, thank you.
Thank you very much. We'll take a short break, and we are back. Final minutes of the program right after this.
You're listening to the Paul Feinbaum Show podcast.
We are officially out of time for this program. We appreciate all of you for being a part of it. Some really interesting guests today. We'll see you right here tomorrow.
Thank you for listening to the Paul Feinbaum Show podcast. The Paul Feinbaum Show airs weekdays on the SEC Network, beginning at 3 Eastern.